everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center and have on the political right, Mr. John Dougal.
Hey, good to be with you. I'm just waiting for my peace prize.
You got it. And on the political left, Shireen Gorbani.
Hello, and hi, listeners. Hope you're doing okay.
Okay, you two. We are 1 year in now to the second term.
Is that a threat or a promise, Natalie?
Of the Trump administration.
There you go.
12 months have passed.
Yep.
There's a lot of ways we can approach this, but let's go some surprises. So I've been surprised how much this president has leaned in to foreign policy and leaned in to basically what I might call nation building, that he's, you know, been willing to go engage in foreign wars.
Yeah, because 2 years ago in the campaign, I thought the Republican Party was going hardcore down the isolationist path,
which
caused me concerns. And so this is a very different dynamic than what I predicted then.
And then he's had an amazing bit of luck in doing it. Now, maybe you can say skill, however our listeners want to do that. But to be able to do what has happened and have relatively, you know, successful missions. I mean, I don't really like that. What was it? 80 Venezuelans were killed. I didn't like stuff like that. But as far as the U.S. interests, they're doing okay.
Well, and I would say little blowback.
I mean,
the international blowback has been relatively minor, all things considered, from my perspective.
I would just like to say that regime change looks pretty good on day one. I think the fallout of this is much, the tail of these kinds of actions we've seen is very long. And I would hate for us to be the, you know, bomber jacket mission accomplished people, considering the way that this does not go well.
I was working as a political appointee in the Bush administration when that happened.
Oh, yeah.
And we felt pretty good.
Bush 2 administration.
Yeah. Bush 43, as we would say. But, you know, he put on the jumpsuit and landed on the aircraft carrier and they had the mission accomplished. And yikes.
Yeah.
Not good.
Far from
any,
it.
Any other surprises for you, Shireen? I mean, is foreign policy the biggest surprise or did you have others?
I think that the level of insularity that it seems like this administration has is surprising to me, and the level of violence they're willing to enact on their own people, whether it's cutting health care, as we're seeing in Minneapolis, turning the military against our own citizens, deploying military to cities like Chicago, Portland. That kind of weaponization of the military against its own people is a bit of a surprise to me.
Yeah. John, has the Greenland bravado been a surprise to you? Because I'm just shocked by it. And the reason I'm shocked is it's not entirely clear to me that we couldn't get everything we want from Greenland without all the bravado. More military bases, done.
Which causes me to wonder, what is it that we want about it? If it's about national security, I mean, I think they're willing to do whatever
deal
with us for that.
I do, too.
In terms of bases and defense, you know, installations and everything else like that. I think they're willing to go there because it serves their interests and the European Union's interests at the same time. If this is about natural resources, there are ways to go about doing that and doing deals with them. But yeah, the bravado of, you know, well, do a deal with us or we're going to come in anyway. Yeah, that surprises me.
Yeah.
But Trump has never been one to, you know, be diplomatic and nuanced
and follow
from my
the rules.
Perspective.
Yeah. Is it bravado or just like a deeply seated need for ego? But we can't determine. But
I think, you know, if you look at maybe his private life and then you look at his life as president, I think his style is disorient people, throw everything out there to try and get a deal done.
Yeah.
So you're willing to throw anything and everything and undercut this, that, and the other to try and then do a deal.
Yeah.
And so you never quite know what he's serious about and what he's not serious about. You know, is he serious about offended by, you know, not getting the Nobel Peace Prize, or is he just, you know, he's focused on Greenland and that was just an excuse and da-da-da-da. But it's throw everything out there, disorient people, and then try and, you know, claim victory on the win that you want.
Let's read a quote from a letter to the Norwegian prime minister where Trump said, "Dear Jonas, considering your country decided not to give me the Nobel Peace Prize for having stopped 8 wars plus, all caps, I no longer feel an obligation to think purely of peace, although it will always be predominant, but can now think about what is good and proper for the United States of America. The world is not secure unless we have complete and total control of Greenland. Thank you."
Yeah.
I don't know. That's It's just so simpleton.
Yeah. It's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, I don't know, but
and some people say it's 4D and 5D chess.
And
you never quite know until it's in hindsight where it's actually going. But this, to me, one of the key things is, okay, Guantanamo Bay. I mean, we've got a base, you know, right there on Cuba. We don't own Cuba. We got military bases all around the world, and we don't have to own those countries. So the push that we have to own Greenland, I don't understand that.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some compelling reason that's not been articulated, but I'm not understanding it.
There's a nuance here that's super interesting, and that is that Article 5 of NATO's charter makes clear that an armed attack against one member is considered an attack on all other, but the charter doesn't specify a course of action if one NATO member attacks another, because it's so unthinkable.
Because
we're in an alliance.
Yep.
We're joined, and we have ideological, you know, consistencies about us.
We assume we're on the same side.
Yeah.
And, well, the other thing is Article 5, it's a little vague about what it means to defend and the level of defense that we provide. And so there is some ambiguity there of other nations. We say we're going to come to your defense, but how we actually come to your defense is a question.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how about this? What do you think
what do you think about his... I mean, I thought he'd come in and want retribution and vengeance mm-hmm. for past wrongs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised at the level that he's gone to.
No. Oh.
To dole out punishment
yeah.
and threats.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, who comes to mind? James Comey, Letitia James, now I guess Mark Kelly. Yeah, I mean, the list goes on and on. Who else is on that list for you?
Well, you got Senator Cassidy,
yep.
Bill Cassidy, you know.
Yeah.
And others, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know.
I think it's indicative of a small man without much vision for leadership, and the vindictiveness is concerning, certainly. I feel like the biggest thing that is, you know, concerning to me again is just the level of violence and destruction that's happening across this country. When we think about things like the dismantling of the CDC, we're seeing record high levels of measles in, you know, across the country.
Yeah.
We're seeing
outbreaks. They're saying that we're going to lose our measles like certification, that we're measles free.
Free, right? When I think about things like the amount of people that are about to lose their health care coverage because this president insisted and this, you know, Congress went along with a billionaire bailout at the expense of working class people in this country. I think just like on and on and on down the list, for me, the ways in which American people are getting absolutely taken by this grift is shocking to me that we're doing it again. Here we go.
Okay, well,
we love it. Apparently.
I think the next 9 months are really interesting.
Okay.
Because we've got midterm elections coming. And this is like a, you know, a moment of sort of reckoning.
Will he become a lame duck or not? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
or?
There's a couple things on my mind. Number one is the economy.
Uh-huh.
And I don't see the economy like being a big tailwind going into the midterms for the president. Just my gut feel.
I think largely he's fallen into the same trap as Biden fell into, which is denying the issues with the economy, mm-hmm. claiming that it's wonderful, everything's great, when everyday people go, prices aren't coming down like I'm expecting. Maybe they're coming down on gas, but they're not coming down on food, which I see
affordability
food every
looms
day.
Large.
Affordability, the made-up word of the Democrats, but affordability matters to folks. And I'm saying, I'm seeing him have the same weaknesses as Biden had. They were both in denial, and there's a problem, and he hasn't paid enough attention to the economy from my perspective,
which I think
is going to cause issues.
Shireen's
and
point.
He's finally paying attention to healthcare, and he's got some good ideas in his proposal from my perspective. But I wish it would have come out a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then Shireen's point
too late.
That the foreign policy gets harder over time.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got the Epstein files.
And the Epstein files.
He's only released, the Justice Department has only released 5% of what's there.
They're not following
the
law.
That's the stat I've heard.
It's supposed to be out.
So I think it becomes sort of a tough 9 months as you push this forward.
Well, I think Pam Bondi made some comment about the importance of people following the rule of law. So Thomas Massey, the contrarian Republican in the House, posted, does that include the DOJ, which has missed two deadlines in terms of releasing these documents?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add, you two, about this first year? The ICE stuff is really hard. I read the thing about the tear gas canister that was under the car of like a child that stopped breathing.
Yes.
I'm just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, I just continuing to talk to friends and family in Minnesota, it is worse than you even imagine that it is. People are living in terror. People are living in terror in our own city, to be clear. You know, families writing notes saying, if I'm not home, like, here's what to do.
I go to my church and interact with some members that I don't know their, you know, naturalization status or anything. But I wonder and I worry.
Yeah.
And I just feel bad.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they're just here at Ensign College or doing something good here, but I don't know if they're...
Then I look at protesters going in and raiding a church. And it's like, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Yeah. How do you...
Why is that a priority?
Stuff. I don't care which side it is. I don't think you should be raiding churches.
Yeah, so. Like I should not be yanking people out of churches, which they're also doing this week.
The other thing that baffles me is, and I'm going to say right now, it's especially with the Democrats, partly with the Republicans, it's like... We're concerned with Trump's abuses of power and everything else like that and the enhancement of executive authority. And yet we want it. Well, it's just Trump. We can trust in the hands of somebody else. And to me, this is like a warning sign. We have too much power in the hands of the federal government, especially too much in the hands of the president. We have a Congress, and I don't care which party, they're derelict. They do Team R or Team D, whichever.
Not doing much.
I mean, they cheerlead their president, but they don't provide the oversight that I think they should. And to me, this should be a lesson of, we got too much in D.C. We need to cut the power, bring it back to the states and the people.
Yeah. Or can you imagine if Congress actually did their job?
Wow. Hey, let's take a brief break. And in this second segment, we'll talk more about some of the local news and the legislative session. Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We'd love to hear from our listeners like you. If you'd like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We want to talk a little bit about local things going on.
So, Natalie, you were
had
part
some
of,
excitement.
You were part of an event that caught some national attention.
A little bit.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Yeah.
You know, this is the Utah Chamber's big event where they release the economic report to the governor and some other things. It's called the Economic Policy Summit. We have legislators there, the governor there. I was asked.
And this doesn't sound like it's going to catch national attention.
Yeah. So. Well, I was asked to facilitate a panel with Governor Cox and former Senator Kyrsten Sinema. And we had some hecklers that had to be hauled out. And it was not fun.
Yeah.
To be at an event in my own town. Grand America, almost 1,000 people in the ballroom, and a guy jumps up and starts yelling vulgarities at Senator Sinema.
About an intimate personal relationship.
Yeah, and I'm just like, alleged. What do I alleged. Do? And then, you know, thankfully there's governor security there that Who, take him out, just, you know, carry him out, and they arrested out in the lobby. But 5 more minutes go by, and another one starts approaching the stage, yelling some of the same kind of vulgarities, using the F word, those sorts of things.
It's very scary.
Scary. I have to tell you that it didn't sit well with me for a whole bunch of reasons, but I did fear for her safety and my safety.
Yeah.
Just because you don't know when someone's doing that, you don't know what else they might have, and they're approaching the stage. And I give a call out to Jeremy Hafen, the head of the Clyde Companies, who stood up with the second one and just picked him up and carried him out.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah, it was not fun.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
Ugh. Well, so I'm like hard shift into something else that's not fun.
Which means in future events when you're doing it, you're always going to be wondering if something like that's going to happen
and
again.
My husband said, didn't they have, you know, like, didn't you have to go through metal detectors and things? I'm like, no, we don't do that in Salt Lake City when you go to a business luncheon.
No, because people are probably caring.
But you know what? I will tell you that Zions Bank will have their big international summit later this year. I wouldn't be surprised. They always have heads of state there. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they have metal detectors come in. And honestly, as a panelist, I might feel better about that.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is we have metal detectors at the Capitol, but they're not looking for weapons. They're, you know, screening for other stuff.
Yeah.
We joke that they're screening for glitter.
I know. It's
but not fun.
Not fun.
And you have, when you think about the dynamics of this, Kyrsten Sinema is not someone who lives here. This isn't people in our backyard. These are people that came in to do this to her.
Yeah.
So that's alarming to me.
It's alarming. It's also indicative, I think, of a time that just feels more divisive, more violent.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there is no way to deny that the Charlie Kirk assassination in our state has, I think, shifted people's just perceptions and thinking about what it feels like to be a public figure.
You know, I was down at Utah Valley University last week, and I found myself in that courtyard mm-hmm. where the assassination happened. I don't know if you've been there, Shireen.
Yeah.
Okay, John, you've probably been there quite a bit.
Yeah.
I never had. Boy, but it's familiar to you now. Like, you go out there and you're like, oh, yeah. This is where this happened. And it's so much smaller than I thought. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of an intimate little courtyard.
Yeah.
Yeah, just right there in between the buildings.
Yeah, yeah. But so we got the legislative session starting this week. Wow.
Started on Tuesday.
What do you think is going to be the themes? We talked about this a little bit last week, and John had the golden moment where he said re-election. Yeah. I said affordability. I can't remember what you said, Shireen.
Oh, who knows? I mean, for me, I think things that I'm tracking already are attacks on the judiciary that are continuing, you know, ways in which the body, Republican supermajority, seems deeply offended that Utahns want to have some say in their government, like with things like Prop 4, and then also the efforts to overturn their anti-union work as well. So I think it'll be this kind of ongoing tension between a body that feels like it's getting further and further disengaged from the realities that Utahns are facing. But what I hope are the priorities are around affordability,
mm-hmm.
You know, doing what we can to address the lake, mm-hmm. you know, really ramp up more mm-hmm. there. Certainly thinking, I'm sure you're experiencing this, but the air quality is, you know, not getting any better. Energy, we've talked about before. Yeah. I don't know. What are you thinking?
That's a good list.
Well, when you say energy, what are you thinking?
Well, I feel like Natalie has persuaded me to be all of the above.
Yes.
You know, look at me.
To have
fist bump.
Some reasonable thinking about maybe winding down things that we know are very expensive and very dirty, ramping up things that are, you know, more sustainable and provide just like greater backups. But I also understand that we need to have, I think, a really serious conversation about the kind of growth that we're having. And do we have the electrical infrastructure, the large scale infrastructure to sustain it?
She's pretty good. You should come get a job at the Gardner Institute, Shireen. You do well in public policy. I would say that one of the things I'm looking for this session is how much do they stay on the priority issues of the state and how much do they get lost in the things that are more minor? So I just, you know, the message bills, the things that take so much oxygen out of the room. I'm hoping that they stay on the priorities. If they stay on housing and energy and affordability, that'll be a good sign to me.
Yeah, that'll be a good sign. Well,
on the judiciary.
One of the things, though, is sometimes the message bills consume more of the media's attention than they actually consume attention in the legislature. Mm-hmm. I remember one year we were dealing with evolution. Okay. And from my perspective, it was a one-hour debate in 45, 46 mm-hmm. calendar days. From the public's perspective, it was like this was every day in the news.
Yeah.
And it's like
that's
that
fair,
is not
John.
The reality on Capitol Hill.
This thing on the judiciary, I saw the bill that looks to make a constitutional amendment to make the Judicial Nominating Commission optional. This is Representative Jason Kyle, Republican from Huntsville. The idea is that a governor can use their recommendation or can pick whoever they want. This one popped for me because I remember so many times in Governor Leavitt's office, his service, where he's picking, you know, judges, one of the most important things a governor does, and how the nominating commission kind of held
ties,
your hands.
Ties his hands.
Yeah, ties his hands. And so in some sense, I like giving the executive more power, but it depends who the executive is. That's the tricky thing.
Depends on their pick.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing.
It may not be who it is, but
I kind of liked the balance of this nominating commission where it's almost like a jury of your peers, where you're saying these are judges that have, you know, sort of conducted themselves with honor and they're worthy of a major pick.
It's interesting. I feel like with all the attacks on the judiciary, it's just worth reminding people, you probably know this, but what percentage of judges that are currently sitting in Utah were put there by, or I guess elevated, mm-hmm. nominated by Republican governors? Do you know?
Well, we've had a Republican governor since 85.
It's 100%.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
And then the, you know, then it goes to this, there's this committee Senate, right, for approval. So how long has there been a supermajority in Utah? Republicans. How long? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Okay, so the point is
before my time
that they get to pick these judges.
Mm-hmm. No, no,
they
no.
Have...
But see, this is the key thing. The commission, the committee that forwards the names to the governor, you can bias that list. So even though it's a Republican governor and a Republican Senate,
they may not see.
They may get filtered along the way. So this is the best of the choices that were forwarded on.
They have two
on.
Stopgaps that are fully controlled by Republicans, and they have put these people in power. So for me, it's just mm-hmm. laughable that
the
we're seeing
thing,
this kind of.
But the other thing
pushback.
I would say is proof's in the pudding. And I will say that the judges that I'm familiar with have been stellar. Now, I know some people might disagree with me, but this judge that's helping with the Charlie Kirk alleged assassin, that guy's good. I don't know if you've seen some of his public commentary, but it's very dignified and very... I'd love to play a clip for you.
In an impossible situation.
We have a whole spectrum. I mean, this is kind of the reality with society. We have some judges that are incredibly stellar. I mean, these are the best of the best. Mm-hmm. And then clearly we have stories of some that have had to resign and other things because of improprieties that they engaged in.
I don't think they resign at the level of our attorney generals.
And they have a whole spectrum throughout there.
Yeah.
But one of the other key things, when Shereen talks about attacks, there's one of the key things that should be attacked, which is what is the workload, what is the speed through which justice happens, and the staffing of the judiciary. For many years, they've said they don't have enough judges for the workload. Folks are talking about, you know, more difficult cases, more complex briefings, et cetera, et cetera. So that is something
that
seriously needs to be addressed.
I would look at similarly sized states and what's the size of their judiciary and compare it to ours. I need an objective measure. It can't just be that there's a backlog and so we're going to go put more on the court. It has to be, what's the accountability as we compare to other states?
Yep, and that's where I'd lots go. Of examples.
That's where I'd go. Hey, other things, tax cut. Shereen John.
Oh, yes, please.
You think we'll get another tax cut? I mean, they've been going after the income tax. It used to be 5%. Now they've got it down to 4.5%. There'll be a bill by Senator McKay to get it to 4.45%. They've been doing this every year. Thoughts?
I think, as you wisely said, it's an election year.
So you should
bet that they're going to try to do it.
I think you will get something. Now, will you get an income tax cut when they're dealing with, you know, how to balance the budget? Perhaps, because where their big constraint is the general fund, mm-hmm. not as much the income tax historically.
Right.
I think you're going to see some at least shifting of the property tax burden in the attempt to give tax relief to homeowners. What I tell folks, though,
they'll put more on business when they do that.
They'll put more on business. But if you're in a bedroom community, it's like a wash. You give you a bigger residential exemption, well, your tax rate's going to go up to make up for it because you don't really have businesses to shift it onto. And so the interesting thing for the legislature will be, if you do that increase to the residential exemption, the biggest tax breaks you're likely going to give are in Salt Lake City and Park City. Mm-hmm. So are you really going to want to give tax breaks to your liberal constituency and not really the Republicans all throughout the state?
Interesting.
Complicated.
Yeah. And for me, right, like I would rather have really well-funded social services when we think about the people that are on a backlog waiting for support in our state, or we think about the, frankly, like absolutely to me shocking level of just disengagement that we have around public health. We could be doing a lot more where we're seeing cuts at the federal level and there isn't a plan in this state to backfill.
But when you're concerned about home ownership and people on fixed income and stuff like that, I fully support reducing the burden on the property tax. Mm-hmm. But that's not just shifting the residential. That is actually taking things off.
I got a sleeper I want to bring up. This is the ICE detention facility that's being proposed in Salt Lake City. This is out, I don't know, sort of by the prison, by the airport.
I think they're searching for a place, but they've kind of talked about
it. The reason I say it's a sleeper is get ready for this to pop in a more significant way. I think there's a reason to believe that the LDS Church and a lot of Utahns will not like being the place where this is located.
Yeah, I hope that's right. Considering our history of, for example, Topaz Mountain, we should know better when it comes to detention camps.
I think of this, John, a little bit like MX Missile, that this is so contrary that the, you know, bringing of undocumented and storing them in a place that isn't up to standards, that it won't feel good in the backyard of the LDS Church.
Well, and I don't know if it'll pop to that extent. I mean, from my perspective,
I say it's a sleeper. I mean, maybe
it's, they already have one in Vegas. To me, this is just another regional one. I'd say the federal government needs to do the federal government's job and stop pushing it on to local governments to do it. Mm-hmm. But it all depends on how that facilities actually run that I think we'll get to your
fair
point.
Fair enough. If it is as humane processing of undocumented people, that would be okay.
That is
especially
not what is happening.
The violent criminal element.
But what's happening on the streets, if that's any indication of what happens in a detention center, doesn't
I think.
But this facility has also been in the works, my understanding, for a couple of years. This is not like a recent.
It is morally abhorrent. And if I'm not mistaken, over 30 people died in ICE detention over this last year. And that is that we know of. So this is not a well-run operation. And I think we should soundly reject it.
Okay. One word for the session. What are you predicting?
Is that a sound? Is that a word?
That groan.
Hold on tight.
Yeah. Hold on tight.
What is it for you?
You know, it's interesting. I'm going to go with keep your eyes open. Watch this closely.
I tell folks, don't judge by the bills introduced. Judge by the result that they actually accomplish.
Yeah. That's fair. Hey, it's been a good discussion. So glad to be with you. John Dougal, Shireen Gorbani. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.